we go. You ready to do this on a Tuesday? All right. The Russian storm centers on Donald Trump Jr. now. The Russian storm about a non-Russian agent meeting with a non-American agent about what turned out to be a non-bit of information, but of course that's the best they've got. Meanwhile, the FBI probe into Bernie Sanders continues and widens. Him and his wife, the focus of a bank fraud investigation. Comey's on defense. He should be. He could be looking at jail time. Christie is beached in Jersey, and D.C. is selling naming rights. Maybe it should be Washington, D.G., the District of Gruber. Maybe that's what it should be. Some thoughts for you, twisted as they may be. Get ready. Let's do this. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop.
Yeah,
stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and wrong. Here is Steve Gruber.
And the smear job continues. The smear job continues today. Because until I see evidence, I'm going to think nothing else. Donald Trump Jr. now the focus of the whole feeding frenzy. They hadn't had any Russian stories for a while. And so now the revelation, not really even the revelation, because it was reported by Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner that they had had this meeting with this Russian attorney, not a Russian agent, just an attorney who happened to be Russian. I wonder if she had been Canadian, if anybody would have cared. But at any rate, the New York Times now with the following headline, Trump Jr. told in an email of Russian effort to aid campaign. Of course, these are anonymous sources. We'll find out if it's true at some later date. Because, well, that's the way these things work. They don't put it right there for you to know and for you to understand, for you to sort out. They just make you guess. Here it is. Before arranging a meeting with a Kremlin-connected Russian lawyer he believed would offer him compromising information about Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump Jr. was informed in an email that the material was part of a Russian government effort to aid his father's candidacy. According to three people, they claim to have knowledge of the email. Of course, all these anonymous sources have blown up time and again. The email to the younger Trump was sent by Rob Gladstone, a publicist and a former tabloid reporter in the UK, a British tabloid reporter who helped broker the June 2016 meeting that lasted all of 10 minutes. In a statement on Sunday, Donald Trump Jr. acknowledged that he was interested in receiving damaging information about Mrs. Clinton. It's called opposition research. It happens in every campaign. Mr. Goldstone's message, as described by the New York Times by these three unnamed people, indicates that the Russian government was the source of the potentially damaging information. It does not elaborate on the wider effort by Moscow to help the Trump campaign. There is no evidence, says the New York Times, to suggest that the promised damaging information was related to Russian government computer hacking that led to the release of thousands of Democratic National Committee emails. The meeting took place less than a week before it was widely reported that Russian hackers had infiltrated the committee's servers, so this happened before that. But the email likely to be of keen interest to the Justice Department and congressional investigators who are examining whether any of President Trump's associates colluded with the Russian government to disrupt last year's election. Now, bear in mind again this woman that they met with. This woman they met with had no connection to the Russian government. Now, they claim a tenuous connection, some back alley connection. Here's what she has a connection to. She has a connection to the same company, Global GPS, that put together the widely and totally discredited dossier about Donald Trump's activities with Russian prostitutes and so forth. So it goes back to the same nefarious pile of accusations that have no foundation. The takeaway from Don Jr., according to the New York Times, was that someone had information potentially helpful to the campaign. It was coming from someone he knew. Don Jr. had no knowledge as to what specific information, if any, would be discussed. It turns out there wasn't any. It is unclear whether Mr. Goldstone had any direct knowledge of the origin of the damaging material. One person who was briefed on the email said it appeared that he was passing along information that had been passed through several others. In fact, it would be safe to say at this point in the article that the New York Times is stretching their headline to make it sound more interesting than it really is. Jared Kushner, Mr. Trump's son-in-law and advisor, along with Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman at the time, also attended the 2016 meeting in New York. And representatives for Kushner referred comments back to an earlier statement, which he voluntarily disclosed the meeting to the federal government. So here you are. Obviously, I'm the first person on a campaign to ever take a meeting to hear info about an opponent, wrote Don Jr. sarcastically. The younger Mr. Trump, who had a reputation during the campaign for having meetings with a wide range of people eager to speak to him, did not join his father's administration. He runs the family business, the Trump Organization, with brother Eric. On Monday, after news reports that he had hired an attorney, he indicated in a tweet that he would be open to speaking with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Happy to work with a committee to pass on what I know, he wrote in a tweet. Mr. Goldstone is a guy who represents pop stars. He's an attorney who represents singers and whose father was President Trump's business partner bringing the Miss Universe pageant to Moscow in 2013. Anyhow, it seems like a whole lot of smoke again and a whole lot of nothing else. We'll see if I'm proven wrong, but this is just the latest pile of nonsense. You know, my son met with somebody. He's not part of the administration. He was not required to do anything, in fact. Hey, by the way, if you're up early today and you're pounding some coffee, good for you. You're going to live longer. You're going to be listening to this program a lot longer because coffee drinkers live longer. That's good news, according to two large-scale studies released Monday that add to extensive research indicating coffee consumption, like this giant jug of coffee I have in front of me here, will lead to better health. You tea drinkers, better pick up the pace. The studies examine the health histories of hundreds of thousands of people who were tracked over many, many years. The studies found that coffee drinking reduced the risk of various diseases among people with several ethnicities, and this effect was seen in drinkers of regular and decaffeinated coffee. I don't drink decaffeinated coffee, all right? Is there a limit to coffee's benefits? I think not. It's here to make me happy in the morning and to make this all happen. Welcome to it on a Tuesday. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty. Waking up and Dr. B.
From the headlines today, there is the crash of a KC-130 supertanker. A KC-130 supertanker airplane from the United States Marine Corps corkscrewed out of the sky into a soybean field in Mississippi. 16 Marines dead at least today. The search for additional victims continuing. The Marine Corps said the aircraft experienced a mishap, I would say. A mishap is a bit of an understatement. The plane spiraled down at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon in a field 85 miles north of Jackson, Mississippi. The plane's debris scattered in a radius of about 5 miles. Nobody's quite sure what happened there. They'll keep an eye on that. KC KC-130. I've flown in KC-130s, a fascinating plane. They're basically a flying... The KC-135 is a big transport plane. You've seen them, the big four screws. The 130 is the one that flies around with a tube that falls back, and the planes come up like honeybees and suckle onto the fuel, and away they go again. And I flew on a couple of those runs a few years back. Interesting stuff, to say the least. Speaking of active duty soldiers and military, an active duty Army soldier arrested over the weekend by the FBI in Hawaii on terrorism charges for providing material support to the Islamic State terror group. Ikaka Kang, 34, arrested Saturday by an FBI SWAT team at the Schofield Barracks, Honolulu. Kang was with the 25th Infantry Division. The FBI believes that Kang was a lone actor. Terrorism, the FBI's number one priority, as you know, also reiterated by the FBI Special Agent in Charge. In fighting this threat, the Honolulu Division of the FBI works with its law enforcement partners and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and in this case, the U.S. Army, to protect the citizens of Hawaii. You know, there's the problem's getting bigger when the United States soldiers are being arrested on base. The hotline number today, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Matt joining us for a quick comment today. Matt, what's on your mind?
I think we should put global warming on trial in the Supreme Court and see if it stands up without an unreasonable doubt.
You wouldn't make it.
That, if you do that, then you'll know which direction you should go. Solar flares are more of a threat. It's a hunch. And I have Bigfoot. I believe Bigfoot exists. So I need home security. So I'm going to push this Bigfoot thing. It doesn't mean you dump money into a bank that you can't withdraw from. We got all our answers on the internet. We don't need government. It's a volunteer tax of one or two pennies per tax. You can volunteer it or not, and you can have money coming out the door into a fund for work, period. You don't even need to dump money in the hole of the government for that. It can run, the internet could fund the government of the world with small government.
All right. Interesting concept, Matt. Thank you for checking in. The hotline number, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. The only people who can be on trial anytime soon will be Bernie and Jane Sanders. Bernie and Jane Sanders are going to be on trial at some point as federal prosecutors step up the probe of the land deal pushed by the wife of Bernie Sanders. The federal investigation of the land deal by Jane, the wife and political advisor of the senator, accelerating now, with prosecutors hauling off more than a dozen boxes of records from the Vermont college she ran once, and well, ran into the ground, calling a state official to testify before a grand jury. Half a dozen people said in interviews in recent days that they had been contacted by the FBI. Former college trustees told the Washington Post that attorneys representing Jane Sanders had interviewed them to learn what potential witnesses might tell the government. Now, the investigation, if you didn't know, centers on the 2010 land purchase that relocated Burlington College to a new campus on more than 32 acres along Lake Champlain, while lining up a $6.7 million loan and additional financing that exceeded a total of $10 million. Jane Sanders told college trustees and lenders that the college had commitments for millions of dollars in donations that could be used to repay the loan. It was all bogus. The real question, though, is whether or not Bernie Sanders, and there's some question about this, whether or not the office of Senator Bernie Sanders was used to flex some political muscle to get that deal pushed through. Keep an eye on it, because that's an actual investigation. The Columbia University Law School professor and confidant of former FBI Director James Comey says that the story put out by The Hill and repeated by Donald Trump and his advocates, that Comey shared classified information with journalists, well, he's pushing back on that. Daniel Richmond, with whom Comey shared at least one memo, the contents of which Richmond shared with the New York Times reporter Michael Schmidt, said President Trump was simply wrong. And here's how dumb this is. No memo was given to me that was marked classified. No kidding, Dan. It was a memo generated by your buddy James Comey. And because Comey didn't write classified on it, doesn't mean it's not classified. It means that your buddy gave you classified information in an effort to smear the boss. And just because you say it's not classified, how do we say that up here? Oh, that doesn't mean doodly squat. Doodly squat. Go with that, Mr. Richmond, because you're in big trouble too. Richmond did share the contents of the memo. The substance of the memo passed on the Times was not marked classified. And to my knowledge, remains unclassified, he protested. The funny thing about this is it's put out by CNN as if it's fact. No memos given to Comey friend marked classified, as if that means anything. Did we not learn class from the Hillary Clinton episode? That just because it doesn't say classified on top of it, if you're the head of the FBI, you need to know what's classified. That's part of your job description, is to know and understand what's classified. Some stooge friend of yours at Columbia Law, well, he may or may not know, and he's trying to do a little CYA there, and that's okay. I get that. There's a lot of that going on all over Washington these days. Here we're exposing EYA, exposing your It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
In a new report from Wallet Hub, Michigan has two of the worst-run cities in the nation. Flint at 143rd out of 150 in Detroit and 149. Of the worst-run cities in America, Detroit is second to last. Nothing to brag about. Meanwhile, commercial properties that are bigger and contain more hazardous waste are more expensive to demolish, so they're coming down slower. Chad Livengood here, writer for Cranes Detroit. Chad, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
First of all, any comments on that Wallet Hub report? I'm sure you saw Detroit being one of the worst, if not just about the worst run city in America. Do you accept that, dismiss that? What do you think?
I don't know how those websites rank cities or what the designation is. But on this issue, on commercial blight, this is like many issues in Detroit where it has just become standard practice and acceptance that vacant buildings sit and sometimes even burn down piles of rubble, sit unattended for months, sometimes years. That's what kind of inspired me to write about this one particular property and look at the city's data. What is going on with commercial blight?
I got to jump in there, Chad. When you say standard practice and acceptance, that sounds a lot like the definition of defeat. You know, I got to be honest. When I'm sitting here listening to you say that, it sounds like defeat. Like the people in Detroit are just like, well, that's just the way it is, and we're going to live with it. And that's sad.
And that's the way with lighting. That's the way it was for a couple of decades. Detroiters got used to just not having streetlights working until the legislature stepped in and created a new mechanism to help fund the fixing of lights. And Mayor Duggan's administration kind of carried forward the plan, and they've replaced 60,000 streetlights in the city of Detroit. And now every street is lit up, even if it doesn't have any residents on it anymore. And at the same time, they're kind of pecking away at other problems, systemic problems in the infrastructure of Detroit that were simply neglected. Underground and water infrastructure, also a neglect in Flint, well documented. And in blight, I mean, the city has torn down 11,700 vacant blighted residential houses in the last 3.5 years. But when it comes to commercial property, it's far less amount of blight has been removed. It's about 280 some structures that have been removed, and 150 of them were in 2015. And what I found in the data is that ever since they took down 150 some buildings in 2015, the demolitions have actually slowed down for a variety of reasons. And it shows when I showed this one property that basically burned down last September. Along a fairly busy street, Mount Elliott Street on the east side, and has been sitting unattended ever since.
So the last big building to come down, Samuel B. Dixon, came down. Adamo Group brought it down. $418,000 spent. I mean, I can see why it's challenging to get these blighted buildings, especially the bigger ones. Even a school, not an industrial site, costing well over $400,000. I mean, it's a big expenditure when you do this one after another after another.
It is. I mean, and schools are a big problem. I mean, Detroit closed so many schools because of depopulation and because of competition from charter schools and neighboring suburbs. There's more than 100 schools that were closed.
Oh, come on. Charter schools didn't put these places out of business. A mass exodus put these places out of business.
Well, the charter schools have taken away kids.
A few.
And put them in, and sometimes they've gone into old DPS schools. But, yeah, the schools are some of the most expensive to take down. And the average price of all the building, of the commercial buildings has been north of $50,000. Remove and it costs about $12,000 to $15,000 usually to take down an old two-story blighted house. So you can see where the money goes and it can be spent a lot faster. So it's a persistent issue and there's limited resources. I mean, talk about industrial. We're not even talking about an industrial site. That's the real expensive thing. The Maroon family, owners of the Ambassador Bridge, are in the real estate development business as well.
Sure.
They just spent $10 million tearing down an old factory, a 2 million square foot factory next to Chrysler's Jefferson North factory. They had an implosion on a Saturday a few weeks ago. I went and witnessed this thing. And you don't see an old factory get imploded very often, but they were doing it because they are helping expand vehicle shipments for Chrysler at a railway right there. So pretty significant.
More fun than the 4th of July. More fun than the 4th of July to watch a building get blown up, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I got up at 5 in the morning on a Saturday to watch a 6:30 a.m.
Absolutely.
Explosion.
Get yourself a good seat and get ready. Usually that's reserved for places like Las Vegas, right? That's kind of cool.
Right. But that's an example of a private sector doing some demolition, and it's pretty darn expensive, but they're doing it for long-term business play to expand the vehicle.
All right, so let me ask you this before we let you run, which is, okay, they've slowed down the demolitions, but the demolitions are going forward. I mean, this is kind of an endless, ongoing process, is it not?
Oh, it is. I mean, the blight survey from 2014 found that there was over 5,000 blighted commercial properties alone. I mean, some of them can be restored, and some of them are being restored in certain segments or neighborhoods in the city, but a lot will have to eventually come down because they're just beyond repair.
All right. Well, there you go. Trying to clean up their act. Detroit is, but it was a lot to clean up over some bad acts over a few different generations. All right. Chad, live and good. Always a pleasure from Cranes Detroit. Thank you for the update.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll take a quick break here. Then coming up next hour, a whole lot more to talk about that farmer band from the farmer's market in East Lansing and why it's so wrong. It's straight ahead on the Steve Gruber Show.